Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this week I'm joined by Lackey Moore to discuss the St Mirren and forthcoming Rangers games. It's not just myself and Lackey Moore on this week's podcast. We have a 10-11 minute chat with Craig Gordon following the signing of his new contract. And we also have the views and predictions on the Rangers game from three Celts who'd flown in from the Far East. Well, two of them did anyway. That's Lewis, Robin and Robert, and you'll hear their predictions for the game and setting out their Celtic credentials. Coming up, just one more thing, you'll hear me talking at the end about various things. Young St Anthony's been unwell this week. Unfortunately, he's going to miss his first game against either the new or the old Rangers in 40 years. Anyway, get well, Saint. But that's enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Lackey Moore, followed by Craig Gordon, followed by Lewis, Robin and Robert. So I'm now joined by Lackey Moore. How are you doing, Lackey?
I'm well, thank you. Well, fine.
So since the last podcast, there's been a game and there's a game coming up as we record this as a game tomorrow. So the last game was the St Mirren game. What did you think of the St Mirren game? Because you and I had a couple of text messages during the game.
Well, I was at the game. I got a ticket. And I thought the first half was very frustrating. It reminded me of the Arsenal game, and I pointed out to my nephew that I was with that they're the same coach, and they played in the same disciplined, organised manner. They never panicked. It wasn't as if they were phased by playing Celtic at Celtic Park. I think sometimes with a slightly smaller crowd, although there was a good crowd on Sunday, it helps smaller teams because the stadium's quieter.
Yeah,
but they actually started very, very well. And they deserve to be in front. Like a few games this season, Celtic's lead-up play was exceedingly slow. And you find yourself saying, we can see it, why can't you see it? I don't mean the coach, I mean the players. Why can't the players see that the build-up's too slow and start moving it a bit quicker? But the second half was better. Although, if the sliced shot goes in, their tea is out, I think.
Well, you never know. I mean, we were a couple of goals down in Motherwell. You know, we've battled back from adversity before.
I have, I suppose, yeah. It would have been difficult because they would have taken confidence from a second goal.
But do you think part of the reason why we start slowly is a lot of the time we go out and immediately we're playing against teams who have everybody behind the ball?
Yeah.
So it leads to a mindset of, well, this is going to take a while. So as long as we keep possession of the ball, and I'm not saying it's a conscious thing, but a sort of subconscious thing that inside the first 2 or 3 minutes, they're thinking, well, we're going to be taking a while anyway and start just passing it for the sake of it.
I think, though, there was an element I thought early on they had a couple of good chances. That had they taken one, that the whole pattern of the game would have changed. The one that Gary Mackay Stevens, when he was played through, I think was it by Armstrong, the terrific pass. The ball stuck in the pitch, and he was sort of, he'd almost run past the ball, and he was trying to drag it. He went to his, you know, to get a shot in, and I thought that's the first time I thought the pitch was a factor. Really, that it does look as though it's not great.
It's interesting you make that point because I sort of lost the rag with the guy in front of me on the game against St Mirren because he was giving the team such a hard time, and obviously, particularly Mackay Stephen, he was really giving him a hard time. And I eventually had to say, we're in the middle of a 30-odd game unbeaten run or whatever it is. Just obviously, this was once we were behind. Give the team a break. Give the guys a break. We've still got plenty of the game to go. He was really, really getting on everybody's case. And that incident you just talked about, a lot of people were getting agitated, Mackay Stephen, on it. And I thought it was clear as day that the problem was
the ball got stuck in the turf and between his feet, and that it wasn't his fault.
I also thought he tried really hard. I thought the way Brendan Rodgers dealt with the substitution afterwards was terrific. The way he said it was one of those days where, although he was trying so hard, nothing was going to happen for him, and it was just something you take in their stride, you replace them.
Yeah,
but they boosted him up. His efforts.
You play golf, and most people listening to the podcast have played sport at some level. I was just discussing this with someone yesterday. I was saying to you earlier before we came on that I go swimming in the mornings, and there are some days when you go in, and if I'm going swimming, there are some days I go in and I just go up and down the pool and it's easy. And there's other days where, without feeling any different before you go in the pool, it just feels like hard work. There's days, I'm sure, you're in the golf course where you stand up there, you ping the ball and it's easy. Other days where you feel no different before you start, and suddenly it's every shot feels like it's really hard work. That happens in life.
On Monday, I had the best round of golf I've had in 5 years, and I couldn't tell you where it came from. It just happened.
I mean, that's not, you know, I'm not excusing and saying Mackay Stevens is a brilliant player and he was just really unlucky. I did, but your point about him trying, because there was another point where everybody sort of moaned and some people got in his back because he messed up a chance, that the chance was created by him in the first place, closing the St Mirren player down and getting possession of the ball.
Sure. The one thing I would say in criticism of Mackay Stevens, and I think it's related, and maybe in his mind, to his position in the hierarchy, is that he wants an extra touch. Mm-hmm. When Griffiths would shoot, Dembele would shoot.
Yep.
He takes an extra touch and the shot gets blocked and the crowd groans. And if people are more confident and just struck it early doors, he'd score more goals. And that would raise his confidence. But he's very much a confidence player. I didn't think he was playing that badly, but nothing was happening for him. I thought Armstrong was very poor on Sunday compared to his earlier performances in the month.
And what did you make of Ebuyi Kouassi?
Well, I thought he emptied that guy.
So did I.
I thought, there's a bit of edge in this boy. But I actually thought he looked great on the ball. He looked very composed. He looked like Beaton with a bit of speed.
Do you know what? I was just going to say, it was only 15 minutes, but that's exactly what I thought. He looks like Beaton. He looks like a Beaton playing 5 yards faster.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I've always liked Beaton. I think when he plays well, he's a good player. But he does sort of slow the game down a wee bit. That guy moved on quite quickly. And quite an accurate passing of the ball.
So, the couple of talking points from the St Mirren game, you've touched on it. St Mirren taking the lead. The fact that they then had a Sklaff clearance from Celtic that hit the bar and could have taken them two up.
The guy's header, how he missed the header, I don't know.
Well, after it hit the bar?
It hits the bar, comes down, the guy just heads it over.
Oh, he's in the post-match press conference, he said that the way the ball was spinning and the angle that he was approaching it from, all he was trying to do was just knock it back into play because he was running in the wrong way to be able to head it towards goal.
I accept that. I've watched it several times. I thought that it was so close to, you know, getting a goal.
So then the other aspect of it, and the guy behind me, who sometimes usually sits beside me, but moved behind me, Paul, he put a bet on Celtic to win at 1-0 to St Mirren. And it was evens.
Mm-hmm.
A minute later, Celtic equalised. A minute after that, Celtic made it 2-1. He went back and checked the odds, and it was 150-1 on for Celtic at that point.
Yeah.
So one of the other talking points is, once Celtic did score, they scored 4 and could have scored 6.
Yes, easily. Well, they did score 6, and 2 were disallowed.
Yeah.
But they actually found the net 6 times.
Yes.
I thought Griffiths was terrific. And I heard Pat Bonner make an interesting comment. He said that he didn't play up beside them barely.
Mm-hmm.
He played on their Thomas Rodgick role. It's just behind the two of them. And they moved the ball in quickly and accurately, and he was involved throughout. I thought he was great.
Which actually gets to when we beat Rangers in the League Cup semi-final, when we had both Griffiths and Dembele in the park. And again, we didn't play them both side by side. In that game, it was more Dembele was behind Griffiths.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Griffiths goes out wide. Do you think he should be trying to accommodate both for the game against the Rangers on Sunday?
I don't know. I mean, I would always play Griffiths, but he doesn't see it like that.
I'm just actually just thinking, have you got any confessions to make to the listeners
about
any St Paul on the Road to Damascus moments about players or coaching staff to renege on previous assessments about the team?
I was actually talking to someone the other day who heard the podcast at Christmas before they started back, and I had suggested that was a point in the season where we might see the game, the level going up a wee bit. And I think Moussa Dembele's level of work rate throughout the game has massively increased. I thought that game against Inverness Carlow Thistle, he was unplayable because he worked so hard the whole game. But I think since the break, he's been terrific. And that my one criticism of him was I didn't think he looked too interested some days. But since the break, he's been marvellous.
Yeah, as you say, up against Inverness, he was unplayable.
When I say I would always play Griffiths, it wouldn't be at the expense of Dembele. I'm not like Stephen. I'm not hung up in two strikers and one striker. I happened to chance upon the Frank McGarvey podcast. Why it was on my iPod. And I was like, I didn't mean to listen to this, but I listened to it anyway. And Steve was only Frank McGarvey. I bet, oh, one striker is ridiculous.
So one of the other talking points that came out of the St Mirren game was Brendan Rodgers' comment that St Mirren were the best domestic team we have played this season. Discuss. Since you're a former teacher, Brendan Rodgers says it, man, discuss.
I thought, I understood what he was saying in terms of the way they played for an hour. They were never phased in that hour. I mean, really, Celtic, apart from the first couple of chances that we referred to with where they made the wrong decision or the shot got blocked, they were very, very comfortable. Now, even in all the other games where they've started slow or have gone behind, they always threatened goals.
Yep.
But they actually threatened goals from after about 10 minutes till the hour, and then they just ran away with it. But I thought they were very composed, they played good football, they were very organised and never phased. And I could see why in that 50 minutes from like the initial flurry of play to Celtic equalising, that they were very impressive. The only, as I said at the beginning, I felt the same about Alloa. I thought Alloa were really, really unlucky the night that we beat them.
I'm just looking at I'm just looking back. I said we had some text conversations during the game. You've texted say, what do you think so far? And I texted you, this is half time. Best 45 minutes of any visiting Scottish team this season.
Right.
High ball to Sutton, who is very cleverly fouling Eric. Their pressure and closing down is excellent. And that was, I agree with you about, I think Brendan's point was, and I was getting frustrated on the radio and even on Twitter with people who don't seem to understand, and this is not to sound a patronising thing, because people who seem to conflict a good performance with a good result.
Uh-huh.
You know, I heard that they were talking on Radio Scotland, making a massive deal about Brendan. You know, was this, you know, Graeme Spears talking about Brendan twisting the knife in managers? I mean, okay, so I don't think the Celtic coaching staff particularly rate Derek McInnes as a coach, but I don't think this was aimed at twisting the knife in Derek McInnes. I think this was just an honest assessment that St Mirren, when Celtic players had the ball, particularly when in their attacking players had the ball, they would go, three players would immediately go to close the ball down, close the space down, make the Celtic players pass it, but it was coordinated because those three would then revert back into formation, and another three would go and press the ball. It wasn't headless chicken stuff. There was a coordination, and then, as I said, the out ball was to play a diagonal across to Sutton, who was very cleverly just pulling on Eric's shirt as he did it to be able to turn Eric, get the ball, move St Mirren up the park, in the same way that in a European game, when we used to play the ball up to Samaras, and Samaras would be very clever with getting something to happen so that the play moved 40 yards up the park. And that's well coached. That's coordinated. And that's better than, you know, I saw somebody, I heard somebody saying on SportsSound, how can he say that when Celtic drew 2-2 with Inverness? There was no difference between the two Inverness performances away this season.
Battered Inverness to a 2-2 draw.
You what?
The 2-2 draw at Inverness, Celtic battered them.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. There was no difference between the Inverness performances in those two games. It's just one game they sneak two goals and the other game they got a doing.
Yeah, that's right. But I thought, I was getting irritated at the quality of Celtic's passing in the first half. But when I looked at it later on and watched it again, it was because they were forced into making passes that were not of their choosing, because exactly what you were saying, they were being hassled and hustled all over the park. And you know, they're maybe not yet Barcelona, you know, they're keeping the ball.
Yes.
And so, I think sometimes Stuart Hansen in particular, when he's playing well, he's very, very good. But when he's struggling a wee bit, he tends to play too quickly. And makes poor passes.
I think also because he's not quite, if you remember, when he was playing at his best, we had Rogic, Brown and Armstrong, where Brown was playing as a number six. Brown's Armstrong is a number 8 and Rogic is a number 10, and he's been playing as a number 10, and that makes a difference. So this, for people who are listening to this, this will make no sense, but for Lackey, this is Ben.
Hello, Ben.
You going to say hello?
Hello.
Ben, who's going to be 7 in 2 days' time.
It's tomorrow.
No, tomorrow's your party.
Tomorrow's my party, but I'm going to be 7 on my birthday, which is on Monday, the day after.
Mm-hmm. 7, eh?
Yeah. Big 7.
But I think I might need to go back through and pass the toilet.
Right, you go back through and watch Dino Trucks. There you go. An interlude, a Netflix advert for Dino Trucks there. So I think that's the difference with Armstrong, mm-hmm. that he's not quite playing the position he was playing when he was playing at his best.
I thought he was terrific Wednesday night. I just thought on Sunday he wasn't just as sharp.
Well, maybe Brendan's right. Maybe the pitch uh-huh. for some of our players makes the difference.
Well, I watched it on the telly after I got home. I found it in Sky, and I think Annie did watch it and she taped it. So I watched it again. And from the high camera, the pitch looks awful.
Oh, do you know, it's interesting. See the day that Brendan made the comment about the pitch?
Uh-huh.
Can't even remember who we were playing that day. And just before, my brother and I sitting, you know, pre-game, and my brother said, you know, we need to do something about that pitch. Maybe it's a plastic cover or something. But he was just, we're in the north stand, and he was just commenting that you could see there was a line in line with the edge of the roof of the north stand, where apparently the water runs off the roof and affects the pitch. That he, you know, about 5-6 yards in from the touchline, that we could see that it was poor. So I'm sure when you're right close up down next to it, it's worse.
I mean, I'm interested that Hearts replaced their pitch after 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
Celtic's pitch was 15 years old when it was lifted to the Commonwealth Games. That's a new pitch.
10. It was 10 years old.
Was it 10? I thought I'd read it was 15. But still, it's better than 2.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you remember, because I remember we ended up, there was a bit of an issue because obviously when the Commonwealth Games finished and then the pitch being relayed, I wonder if the issue is that the pitch was played on too quickly after being laid. After Commonwealth Games, because I understand that the issue with redoing the pitch this summer is it will be tight. If we were to decide to redo the pitch, it would be very tight to get it all done and ready for Champions League qualifiers
mm-hmm.
and have the pitch properly bedded down.
Uh-huh.
I also understand that part of the problem for the pitch is I think some of the undersoil heating has burnt some of the grass in bits.
Yeah. Although it's not been the worst winter for frost, has it?
No, it's not. It's not. And, you know, the two things about it, it's not been the worst winter for frost and we had a winter break.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is we've just gone through that period where we've had something like 8 out of 10 games have been at Celtic Park, something like that.
They had a long period at the start of the season where they had no home games, didn't they?
Yeah, so it could well be in the just... Oh, and do you know, the other thing is, I was just about to say, and you know, it's not been frosty, it's not actually been particularly damp either. You know, it's not like we've had days upon days of non-stop rain.
No.
For it to be churned up. Anyway, as I said in the Mark Cooper podcast, I'm no grass expert, so I can hardly start giving Hazy the grounds and the other groundsmen any tips on how to do the grass.
I'm having problems with my lawn.
Well, the one thing I do know about it, because I was speaking to a gardening guy the other day.
Is that Ali?
I bumped into Ali McCoist and I said, any tips on my grass? Because I've got a dog and she's a female, so she burns the grass if she goes out and does a pee on it. No, apparently grass grows at 10 degrees and upwards.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of spells of more than 10 degrees.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I know about grass.
Yeah. Well, all I know is that the golf course will be cutting grass all winter.
Aye. So, that's the St Mirren game. Do you think the press went a bit over the top about Brendan Sane?
Of course. They'll do that with anything, he says. I find it interesting that he's the least offensive manager in his press conferences, that he always finds something controversial to pick on. And he actually more or less said the other day to him, you know, it's not the story you want to hear.
I suppose the only issue is, if we are winning every week, what other story is there for them to write? So I thought I'd do some mixing up the flavours in the area of the podcast this week. Since Lackey and I have just been discussing the St Mirren game, I thought it appropriate that we now have a bit of the chat from Craig Gordon. So we'll hear from Craig, and then we'll get on to discussion about the forthcoming Glasgow derby. First of all, one of the things I got the sense of in your 15-year career, are you now fed up with people asking you about the 3 years you were out with injury?
Yes, definitely, yeah. Let's not bother talking about that. It's always a topic of conversation, but it's a good story. You know, I mean, not many people have ever managed to do that and come back, so I can understand that that people want to know how that was even possible.
And also, do you start to get fed up that now people are talking about your age? Because that was the other thing I got. You're 34 now, Craig.
Yeah, I know. I had that in the TV as well. The first thing they mentioned, and then I went in the written press and they mentioned it. It's all right. I'm even at 37 when this contract's over. It's still not particularly old for a goalkeeper.
So no.
It makes no difference to me what anybody wants to say about that. I missed 3 years, so... Really, if you take that off, I'm only 31, so that's fine.
See, one of the things, just as an aside before I get on to you, do you see yourself becoming a coach or a manager down the line?
I don't know. I'm not entirely sure whether I'll go into that or not. Perhaps.
The reason I was asking is because one of the questions you were asked from the in there was, do you see things happening in a game?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I've always thought is goalkeepers see more of the game than any other, because if you're a midfield player, the game's happening all around you,
mm-hmm.
and you're involved.
Yeah.
You're the most static set of eyes on the park, and the whole game's in front of you. You're not surprised there's not more goalkeepers who end up in coaching and management.
I think there will do in years to come. I think maybe in years gone by people thought goalkeepers were just there to catch it and kick it, whereas now we're much more involved in the game. We're passing the ball out from the back, we're starting attacks, we've got to look at the game much more tactically than perhaps goalkeepers from 15, 20 years ago and beyond did. So I think, moving forward, I think you will see more goalkeepers being managers, and Tommy Wright does it at St Johnson particularly well. It's unbelievable for them. So it is possible, but I think there will be, in years to come, I think there'll be more.
You talked there about the game has changed. How much, I mean, you've been a first team footballer for 15 years. When I was growing up,
British goalkeepers came for crosses, held the ball, and anybody who punched it was a foreign goalkeeper who didn't know what he was doing type concept. And now we've got all this chat about keepers having to be sweepers.
Yeah.
How much has the game changed in the 15 years you've been?
Yeah, it has. Everything. I mean, sports science has become more important, and you know, the fitness side of things has gone up a level. I mean, I remember pre-seasons when I first started, we'd go to the beach and run up and down the sand dunes, and everybody done the same training.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you were a goalkeeper, defender, striker, it didn't matter. You're all running up and down the beach, so, and that was how you got fit. But now it's much more structured to each position and the needs of what you need to be able to go out and play like. So I think that in itself will help players now go longer into their 30s, and hopefully. Mm-hmm. And the downside of that is the amount of games now that we have to play are a lot higher. But you know, hopefully that side of things and with the medical staff that we have now, that hopefully things will improve and players will get to play even longer.
Yeah, I mean, you're 5 caps short of the Hall of Fame, and you just talked about there about the record of the order of games. We're playing Champions League football in July, and the last Scotland game's 6th of June.
10th.
10th of June. Not that you've got it etched in your memory. So how do you manage simple things like family life, holidays?
That's difficult. Yeah, that's difficult. And football kind of takes over your life. It's not a long career, but it certainly takes over for that uh-huh. period. And it has to come first. And you know, families have to deal with that and go along with it. And you know, maybe from the outside, people think that it's very, very easy. You're home by 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's not like that at all.
It's 22 here.
22,
so
I'll be somewhere between 3 and 4 normally the time I get home. Uh-huh. So but then that's Saturday, Sunday as well. You've got a Sunday game. You're training Saturday. You're in the hotel. Sunday's the game, so you don't get an awful lot of time off. So it's. Maybe not quite as easy as everybody thinks, but certainly I wouldn't change it for the world.
And you, not to sound like an old man, I'm 46, do you find yourself having to manage your body, ignoring the injury, but just your body differently as you're getting older to be able to cope with the volume of games and keep playing?
Not at the moment. I've hardly missed a training session since I've been at Celtic. Obviously you have to change the tempo depending on when the games are, but Woodsy's great with that. He takes care of all that and makes sure that I'm peaking for games, and when we have to do hard sessions, when we have to do lighter ones, and he takes care of all of that, which is good. That I don't need to think about that. I just need to concentrate and go out and train and play.
Do you think goalkeepers being good with their feet and being an intrinsic part of the way a team plays, do you think that's just football goes through phases of this is the way that we're going to do it for a period of time? Do you think it's a current thing, or do you think it's a long term trend that goalkeepers are going to be seen as a almost a sweeper pivot?
Yeah, I think it'll continue. I don't think it's going to stop. Certainly there's different tactics and in different games the goalkeeper might be used to play longer balls depending on who you're playing, but certainly for the bigger teams, I think that's the way they'll go. It depends on each individual goalkeeper, and mm-hmm. I think definitely the younger ones coming through will be focusing now that a lot of their coaching should be to play the ball with their feet. I mean, probably 80-90% of the touches I get in a game are with my feet, so
mm-hmm.
the training for the younger goalkeepers coming through has got to be structured around that. And the main aspect will always be to keep the ball out of the net.
Yep.
And from that point of view, the goalkeeping shouldn't change too much. But this is an extra thing that now a lot of coaches and a lot of teams will be looking for, and it could be the difference between, you know, being a good goalkeeper and a great one.
I mean, I like my cricket, and I think back to 25, 30 years ago, someone like Bob Taylor could bat at number 10 for England as a wicketkeeper only.
Yeah.
Now a wicketkeeper's got to be someone who could get in the team in his own right as a batsman first.
Yeah.
Do you think, could you see goalkeepers being you've got to be able to be as good as one of the centre halves as a footballer?
I think it's get in that direction, whether it ever gets quite to that. But yeah, I mean, some goalkeepers are better than some centre halves. You look at the.
Are you putting yourself forward, or any centre half here? Or?
I wouldn't like to name names, but no, there is. I mean, you look at some of the best goalkeepers in the world with their feet.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good footballers, and better than some of the centre halves you would find in divisions lower down. So there is a case that the standard of that is coming up to try and meet with a defender or a player. And the manager here's mentioned the goalkeeper being the 11th player, and that's mm-hmm. what he wants. So there definitely is a push to try and get to that standard.
I mean, what was the as a fan, you can see there's just a difference. But you were only not in the team for 3-4 games.
5.
I was trying to minimise it. It's not like you've gone away and trained for 5 years a completely different way of playing football. What was the tweak? Was it just position? Is it just
already,
being positional?
It already started. So even before I came out of the team, it was improving. Maybe not quick enough, but it was mm-hmm. improving, and continued to improve during those 5 games out. But yeah, and I think also with me improving, that the team then realises that they have to get into the right positions quicker to make it easier, to allow me more time on the ball, or to give an angle to receive a pass that mm-hmm. That they maybe hadn't been doing before. So although everybody looks at me coming back in 5 games later, it was also 5 weeks further down the line of coaching the team to get into better areas. So yeah, I'd had definitely improved, but so had they.
So it's the centre half moving to a different position, which gives you an extra 2 seconds on the ball, so you don't look harassed passing the ball out, and they don't get, you know. It's a
whole team thing, mm-hmm. and it's not just the centre halves. It's the movement from the midfield, from the full backs, from the striker, so that I know which area I'm hitting and which player's going to be on. So it was just a kind of progression from the start of the season that we'd started trying to work out our way of playing, and the time I came back in, that I had it in my head, I'd figured it out and I knew exactly what was expected.
Well, at least you missed Barcelona away.
I know, I'm a bit gutted about that though. I would quite like that. But,
well, there's next season when we're in the last 8.
That'll do, yeah, I'll play them then.
Do you want to explain then what you were doing on Sunday in the St Mirren bit in the second half?
That was a little Cruyff onto my right foot facing the goal line, then dragged it back behind the striker and took off up the line. Yeah, it was something I probably won't bring out too often, to be honest. But I managed to shield the ball and get it away from the danger area and win a free kick, so there's no harm there.
Do you know what I noticed? There was less panic from the supporters, you doing that, than there would have been 6 months ago, just the ball passed back to you.
Yeah, well, maybe they've started to realise that it's not quite so bad, and sometimes it's necessary to restart the attacks. But the reason for that happening was 2 of their players moving into the same area, so that we didn't spread the game. So it was, yeah, tactically we got that a bit wrong with the guys in front of me, of where they needed to be, mm-hmm. which closed off my options. So I then had to get a little bit creative and trying to create myself some space.
All worked out in the end, and they didn't score.
Exactly.
So what's your hopes and predictions for the next 3 years of your contract?
Keep winning. Keep winning trophies, win as many as I can. Get enough caps to reach the Hall of Fame of Scotland and beyond. I think Alan Ruff's got 53. He's the second top goalkeeper mm-hmm. for caps, so he'd be the next one in my sights.
Are you going to get a perm to fit in with?
If I get 54, maybe. Just to,
I think you should, on your 54th cap, wear a perm, get a perm.
That's going to be a good idea. I'll keep that one in mind.
Maybe put a jumper, a ball up your jumper as well, just to
fill out. I'm not giving Ruffy that kind of stick. He's on the radio, he could give me it back, so I'll stick up for him.
Okay, Craig, thanks very much.
All right, cheers.
As we record this, it's Saturday. Tomorrow we play the Rangers Football Club, International Football Club, whatever they're called. What's your expectation tomorrow?
Oh, I hope they hammer them. But as long as they beat them, I'll be quite happy. I was saying to someone the other day, I don't know if I said to you in a text once, that I don't think about this unbeaten record thing at all, but I want them to win every game they play in Glasgow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, you did say that in the text, and I understand your point, and I agree. I'm not thinking we must go unbeaten, we must win every game between now and the end of the season, but every Celtic game that approaches, I'm not going into it thinking, oh, well, I wouldn't be bothered if we didn't win today. I want to win every game.
Yeah, that's different, but I know that if at the end of the season I can look back and they have won every game they played in the city of Glasgow, we will have a treble.
Yes.
A whitewash. Everything you dream of will have come to pass. So win your games in the city. That's
so we're playing the Rangers. We don't know, obviously, it's a different coach to Warburton. Now, I understand from, it's actually, as part of the gossip story about Kenny Miller storming out because he was subbed at half time and chucking a bottle at Murty and things like that.
I haven't heard that at all.
Did you not?
No, I didn't read the paper.
Oh, no, this was tweeted by a guy called Celtic Rumours, whoever he is.
I never saw that.
Remember, he used to be the guy who was used to be called Glenn Tim Tim. Remember him?
I'm trying to stay away from Twitter for Glenn.
Oh, that's right. Well, the rumour is that young Kenny Miller got substituted at half-time in the Rangers-Hamilton game, the one where Rangers should have been down to nine men.
Yes.
And where they got a penalty for a guy tripping over his feet by a referee who, allegedly, I am well informed, by someone who spoke to someone who has been in the car when that man signed the sash.
Well, won't be the first time.
No. So, apparently, young Kenny Miller gets substituted for tactical reasons only and allegedly threw a bottle at a member of the Rangers coaching staff and stormed out of Ibrox.
Oh, that's true.
But exactly. But the argument, but the reason allegedly why he'd been substituted was because Graham Murty wanted to play a more direct style of football. But yeah, well, he just wanted to play it much more direct, straight into the box, high ball, head on.
Right. Okay.
So, I mentioned this to someone and I am led to believe that Chris Davies was at Reading at the same time that Graham Murty was a right back for Reading. And what I'm told is that Graham Murty isn't one of these people who likes this fancy Dan passing about a lot football and prefers a more direct style. So the only issue is that their man for that is Garner, who's suspended for Sunday. So, but I think with a former Rangers season book holder as referee and a coach who prefers long ball football, we might be in for some up in the air and kick and rush and kick a player on Saturday. Do you think we're equipped for that?
Yeah, I would think so. They don't have any very, very tall guys, I don't think, like Chris Sutton's brother.
Yeah.
So that physical duel that Fyashenko eventually won, I think. It would be to do with height, and he's strong. And I think if Boyata plays as Boyata can play, at his best, he'll take care of the rest of them. I'm not sure about Michael Lustig still. I'm just wondering if that other boy might be a better attacking option. He's quicker.
Yeah, but I think the concept is that Lustig's more defensive. And so if you decide that you want Tierney to be right up the park, you've got the comfort of Lustig being able to come into a three.
Actually, I thought that was part of the problem last Saturday, was that until into the second half, I don't think Tierney got beyond the fullback once. There was no attacking threat from the fullbacks.
But then, as you say, until the second half, and obviously the number of goals we scored in the second half, one of the big things this season is the number of goals that we are scoring from 20 minutes to go onwards in a game. Because, one, our passing of the ball about a lot tires out the opposition, chasing the ball's tiring, and we are just generally fitter to play at that level. So, do you think it's going to be tight until 20 minutes to go and then we take over, or do you think it's going to be a... from the start?
I don't know. I mean, I think if Celtic turn up, that's always my concern. If Celtic turn up, they'll beat them. Now, they might beat them by battering them, or they might beat them by patient play, but if Celtic turn up and play the way Celtic can play, they will win. But your concern in these games is, you know, refereeing decisions, things like that, goals being allowed, disallowed. You just don't know that there are variables there. But if Celtic play as Celtic can play, they will win. You know, I don't look at the bookmakers, but I don't know what the odds are. But they're usually right.
So what's your, I'm going to get the odds while you're telling me this. What's your team for Sunday? I mean, I say it's becoming quite easy to pick the Celtic team, I think, with maybe one exception. What's your team?
Well, I would think he said that Forrest is fit and moving well. I like Forrest when he's playing well. I think he's been very good this season. Patrick Roberts, I think, is actually quite good at coming on against a tiring defence and using his subtle skills. But I think it's a case of just if everybody stands up and plays their part, wins their own personal battles, Celtic will beat them.
So,
I'd love it if they battered them. I really would. I think this season, if they can beat them three times, it will really put them in their place for a long time to come. Just don't give them any encouragement.
Well, the odds, to run through it for you, the odds are Celtic are 3-1 on, a draw is 4-1, Rangers are 17-2, both teams to score is 4-5, first goal scorer, good grief, Lee Griffiths 5-2, Dembele 3-1, 3-1 and Dembele to be first goal scorer, I think that's incredible odds. And I think Boyata to score are great odds.
I think the goal scoring thing's a mugs game. Really do. Just a punt or not.
Winning margin.
Well, you predicted a winning margin in the first game.
A 0-0 draw is 14-1. Celtic to win by one goal is 5-2. Celtic to win by four or more goals is 6-1. Rangers to win by four or more goals is 500-1. Rangers to win by three goals is 125-1. Rangers to win by two goals is 33-1.
I mean, we're basing our analysis of this game on years of a different club. When, you know, the likelihood of us losing games was more so than nowadays. But in all seriousness, if you look at the two, I saw one the other day, some guy had said that they had better players than us, but we had a better team. But man for man, they had superior players. And I was sitting thinking, what kind of lunatic comes to that conclusion? When you've got a team of free transfers and loanies against a team of internationals, that they have better players.
That's just nonsense. There's not a single Rangers player we get in the Celtic team. I don't think there's a Rangers player we get in the Celtic bench.
No. I mean, that's the reality of it. That we are still coloured in our analysis by years of a different experience. So it's hard to come right out and say, we will gub them. But you actually know that if Celtic play well tomorrow, it won't be a match of equals.
No, I mean, apart from discount the Hamilton game, and Rangers haven't won a game by more than two goals all season. They're not a good team.
Even the St. Johnstone game, how they threw that away, having it back to two each, that was most unexpected. I fully expected St. Johnstone to get the winner.
I mean, I do agree that, you know, the podcast I was bemoaning where they were talking, making a big deal of Brendan Rodgers stating the obvious about St. Mirren. The one thing that I did think Keith Jackson made the point, the only team who can beat Celtic this season is Celtic.
Yes.
Through complacency.
Uh-huh.
And obviously we've seen, you know, we went to Ibrox under Lou McCarrie,
uh-huh,
and got a result when we were very poor and they were winning all before them.
Uh-huh.
So that for me is the biggest thing. Anytime scorer, Moussa Dembele, 8-13 on. Scott Sinclair, 10-11. Lee Griffiths, 1-2. But I think a good bet is anytime scorer, Dedrick Boyata, at 5-1 from a corner kick. Because their big problem is, how did he play against us? Did he just sit in? Well, you know, we just sat in against Barcelona and get thumped.
Yeah.
Do you try and press us high up the park? Well, the problem with pressing high up the park is you then have to have your back four also pressing high, or your back four sitting deep. If you press high with your back four, their two centre-halves, I think, might be Senderos and Clint Hill. So Dembele, Sinclair, and if Forrest was fit, Forrest to be able to play in behind that? Or if you then decide, well, we don't have the pace to allow someone to come in behind us, so we're going to press them high, but we're going to sit deep. Well, that just leaves a massive hole in the middle of the park for us to play football.
So the one concern, it seems daft saying this, considering the number of goals we're scoring, but we're still at a point, I think, where we don't have a proper number 10, like the way Rodgers seemed to be developing into, to make that really insightful pass. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When the box is packed.
Well, there might be a special number 10 thing tomorrow. Maybe there'll be a special number 10 thing happen tomorrow that we're all not expecting. Who knows?
Yes.
So, name your team. I want you to give me your team.
Well, I think apart from my quest about Lusting and in Gamboa, I think the defence picks itself. So it'll be Gordon. Although he may play Simonovic, you don't know. Is Simonovic fit?
I don't know. I've been trying to find out if Simonovic is fit or not. I don't know if he's fit, because what's happened since the game at Ibrox, where Eric passed the ball to for them to get their goal, since then it's been Boyata plus either Simonovic or Eric. And actually, I think Simonovic has been ahead of Eric. Eric's come in when Simonovic has not been fit.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a chance it could be Simonovic.
They do have options.
Yeah.
It depends on how Belinda sees the game developing.
So your back four is going to be Lustig, Boyata, Tierney, and either Simonovic or Sviatchenko.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And then middle of the park?
Well, Brown will be playing, and I imagine Armstrong will be playing.
Yep.
And he seems to be going with Beattle.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't have any objection to Henderson playing, because I think Henderson is a good footballer. But if Forrest was playing, I would play Forrest to start rather than Paddy Roberts. But I'm not sure I'd be bringing Paddy Roberts on,
right,
to try and take advantage of a tiring defence.
Yep.
Obviously, Moussa will play and Scott Sinclair will play. Now, is that 4-3-3? That is really.
Yeah.
But I might, as you say, might go with Lee Griffiths in the midfield in a withdrawn role and need Forrest out. But we'll see.
We'll see. And the score?
I don't know. I mean, I'm always pleased with any score that's got Rangers nothing on it. And Celtic to score. I would really like them to give them a good thumping and then do it again in the cup tie. I was very concerned. I know we're superstitious, but it's many, many years since we've won a Scottish Cup semi-final.
Yeah.
We've won League Cup semi-finals, we've won League Cups, we've won Scottish Cup finals. But it's a long time since we've beaten a semi-final. And that's their best shot at beating us.
Okay, so you're going for a Celtic victory, as long as Rangers have nothing.
I like the nothing because it gives you nothing to cheer about.
Yeah.
That's the best thing. Nothing to cheer about.
Right. With that, I will say, Lackey Moore, thanks very much.
A pleasure.
So I have three special guests for the podcast who, what they're going to do is going to introduce themselves in turn, give their Celtic credentials by saying the first game that they went to and their first Celtic hero. They didn't know this until I'm saying this just now. And then their prediction for the game against the new Rangers at the weekend. So
Hi, my name's Lewis. My first Celtic game was when I was 3 years old. I watched Henrik Larsson score a hat-trick against Hibs when we won 3-0, and he was obviously my Celtic hero, and I think we're going to win 7-1 against Rangers, Dembele to get a hat-trick.
Who's going to get the other four then?
I don't know.
And how are we going to lose a goal?
We're going to lose a goal because I've been watching Celtic for quite a few years, and we always make a few mistakes in the game, but I'm sure we'll, you know, thrash them.
Next up.
Hi, I'm Robert. I live in Singapore now, but back for the match on Sunday. I think Celtic will win 2-0. My first Celtic game, 1967, just before we won the European Cup. A defeat at home to Dundee United. My first Celtic hero was Jimmy Johnson, and my favourite Celtic player even today is Jimmy Johnson. So we'll take any victory at all on Sunday. It's a long way back to Singapore if we don't win.
Hi, I'm Robin. My first vivid memory of a Celtic game was the Centenary Cup final in 73. I would have gone to games before then, but that's my vivid memory. Obviously, my hero was Kenny Dalglish, and I went a lot of games during that period. I don't think at that time we really knew how good he was. Prediction for Sunday, I'm going for 4-0, conservative. I think Dembele to score at least a couple. More importantly though, I want us to dominate them in such a way that they realise how mediocre they actually are. So fingers crossed, this is the makings to be an outstanding season.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me light.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast. There'll be more along soon, and thanks again for listening. You can contact us via email on podcasts@celticunderground.net. That's podcasts plural at celticunderground.net. Me and the guys are all on Twitter. Me, I'm at Harry Brady CU. There's obviously Eddie Pearson at Celtic Rumours. Hullboy at Hullboy with an H. At Lackeymore1, at Marco Cooper, at Stephen4_2. Get better soon, St. Anthony, who's a bit unwell at the moment. And you can pick your podcast up from Audio Boom, Spreaker, YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, and wherever else you get your podcasts. I was looking at the volume of downloads that ourselves, and at By The Min had for the Chris Davies interview, and it just showed you the demand from Celtic fans for good quality content, even if I do say so myself. Both ourselves at various points were in the top 30 podcasts for basically the same audio, and it made me look at the reviews. So thanks very much for everybody who reviewed the podcast. I particularly like the two negative reviews. One was from the time when Eddie stopped, and the sort of month gap before I picked up the reins was from somebody called Karma, saying I hope something bad has happened to them. So I know it's taken a wee while, 4 years or so to get back, but thanks for that, Karma. And also like the guy who said, I've had to ditch listening to this because since Harry Beattie's become the host, it's unlistenable because he's so condescending. Thanks. I'm trying to think of a smart-ass way to patronise you, but thanks anyway. So if you want to do reviews, you can do those on iTunes, and or you can email in your new music, any ideas for guests that we should have, contact us. Just now, me, Harry Brady, saying thanks very much for downloading and listening. Good night, and God bless. Good night.
Bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, There should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine.